if somebody goes to check you out and they go on your personal page and there's pictures of you getting drunk at the football game and having mud wrestling in your backyard on July 4th, and they're like, wait a minute, that's not consistent with the type of person that I believe is going to bring value to me. And you go, wait a minute, but that's me, that's person. Yeah, but we're not in the world anymore of keeping our business life separate from our personal life. That's gone. It's over.
Better Than Rich show listener, we have John Lester on the podcast today. And this is, again, a very tactical conversation that we have about building sales process. We've had other guests on the show that talk about sales concept and sales tactics and tools. We actually talk about sales process that helps business owners and solopreneurs create a buying environment. I really think you're going to enjoy this conversation. We talk a little bit about mindset. We talk about sales process. We talk about taking predictability and bringing it into the marketing so that way it makes a higher conversion on the back end. I really love some of his psychology that he talks about in this conversation, his attitudes towards selling. A lot of really cool things. He even has a cool offer at the end where he's doing a 5-week cohort for people who want or need to learn how to sell and just install some upgraded sales process in their business. So another great episode with John Lester on the Better Than Rich Show. Welcome to the Better Than Rich Show with your hosts, Andrew Biggs and Mike Abramowitz. The Better Than Rich Show helps ambitious leaders who are on a mission to leave the world better than they found it, change their perspective on what's important, increase their income and impact, and systemize their life and business. If you've ever struggled with finding your purpose, have felt disconnected or distracted, or found yourself going through the motions, this show will remind you that what you do matters and will re-inspire you to chase your highest dreams. It's time for you to become better than rich. Welcome back to the Better Than Rich Show. I'm your host today, Mike Abramowitz, and I am here with John Lester, the sales expert. Welcome to the show, brother.
Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Glad to be here.
Well, I'm really appreciative of you taking the time to offer tremendous value to our audience. We've had a couple of guests on the show about sales and sales expertise, and we have high demand for this topic. So really excited to dig in and just pick your brain. And listener, I'm going to do my best to pull out of John as many tactical and practical tools as we possibly can. I would like to start, John, with there's lots of misconceptions and different beliefs around what sales is and what sales is not. I know my definition of what sales is and I know what it's not, but I'd like to hear from you and have you start there. From if someone asked you, what is sales and what is sales, what is not sales, what would be your response?
Sales is helping somebody solve a problem that is important to them. It is that simple. It's a lot of layers underneath that, but that is basically it. And I want to key on one of the words I used because it's absolutely super important, helping. Sales is not pushing. Sales is not forcing. Sales is not negotiating, convincing, conniving. Sales is not backslapping, all these other things. Sales is helping somebody else solve a problem. I just want to leave that there for a second because I want people to really understand that, because I'm going to blow up some concepts people have of sales during the session.
So does this mean that if I'm the person who's doing the selling, that means I know that you have a problem that you need help solving, or you need help? So therefore, I know you need help. Therefore, I'm pushing back a little bit, obviously. I know you need help, and I know I'm the one that can help you. Where does that level of certainty come from inside of the person that is selling to know that I can actually help you? Or maybe sometimes they can help. What would you say to that?
That's a great question. And then there are kind of two layers I want to talk about, and we'll go in this order. Most people in sales, most people selling, have what we all call a target market. So there's a group of people that they are trying to help, and they're trying to help them around certain problems. So the problem set from a business perspective, and yes, we're going to go deep into the second. The problem set from a business perspective is somewhat known. So if I'm a life insurance salesperson, I'm not going to sit and talk to the person about having a craniotomy, about building a new garage. I'm going to talk to them about life insurance and what that means to them and what their goals and objectives are in getting life insurance. So a person in sales in the same market for a while should have a pretty good sense of what their target market individuals want to talk about, what problems they're facing, and how they can solve those problems. That's a macro level. At a micro level, what everybody needs to understand is that there are two aspects to sales from a problem perspective. One is the individual buyer's personal problems and personal goals and objectives. So in other words, what are they trying to solve? What problem are they trying to solve? And the problem is never, oh, somebody needs my system. Somebody needs a new technology stack. Somebody needs an addition to their house. That is not the problem they're trying to solve. There is some other emotional problem that they're trying to solve that has to be identified, has to be expanded upon so that we understand what the extent of that problem really is. And then you see if you can solve that problem with the solution that you have as a seller. But the second part to that, and this is very important, is that people buy for emotional reasons. They buy for personal reasons. They justify for technical reasons. They justify for tactical reasons. So 45-year-old guy, two kids, goes out one day, sees, and trust me, every time I see one of these things, my head explodes, the new Corvette. To me, it is one of the most beautiful vehicles that I've ever seen on the road. So he goes out and he buys it. He's got no business buying it. He's got two kids at home. He hasn't paid the mortgage, and the college tuition or whatever hasn't been fully funded. He goes home because in his mind, it's important that he gets it because it's fulfilling an ego need that he has. What do you think he does when he gets home? Does he say to his wife, oh, it's fulfilling an ego need? No, he says, darling, I bought this for you because you and I are going to get to be able to spend lots of weekends driving out in the country at the top down. So there's the personal buying motivation. Then there's the tactical justification method. A good salesperson helps somebody uncover the personal needs, the personal problems, helps the person understand what those really are, what it means to solve them, and then gives them the tactical explanation when they have to go and justify it.
This requires the person of influence, the salesperson in this, to, number one, know their avatar extremely well, and number two, know the product or service that they're selling really well. Would you agree that they need to have some sort of product knowledge and avatar knowledge in order to effectively understand the consumer psychology and the behavior in order to have that feeling that you just explained with this gentleman who's buying a Corvette?
They do, but they don't need as much as you would think. For the most part, most sales training, it's been changing very recently, but I've only seen one person do a really good job of this. Most sales training is around two things. It's around selling tactics. How do I get the person to say yes? How do I get the person to do this? So it's all about how do I control the other person? The other thing it's about is, we're told, is about product knowledge. But the buyer is not interested in the product knowledge. And this is really interesting. If you're in a conversation with the buyer and it's a technical discussion, it is very likely that you're at the wrong level of buyer. A true buyer is looking really, and we're going to do this from a business perspective, but you can translate this to a personal perspective. A buyer is really, from a business perspective, trying to solve only one of two problems. At the business side, it's either top line or bottom line. That's it. That's all you get to solve in a business. The personal issues as to why, or the personal challenges as to why they're trying to solve it are things along the lines of they feel good about themselves, it's going to get them a promotion, ego, there's something in their past that they're dealing with. Those all exist. So the notion that somebody has to truly understand their product doesn't hold if you're looking at it from the understanding of the nits and bits and the bites of the product. You have to understand the application of your product, how it relates to solving the types of problems that your client has. Yes, you should know some technical aspects of it. Why? And it's not what most people would think. You have to understand that so that the buyer gets the sense that you know what you're talking about. And I'm going to use just a very weird example. But if you're out selling high-end watches, do you have to know what kind of mechanism in the watch? Yeah. Do you have to understand how that mechanism works? No, not really. Because why is that person buying a high-end watch? To tell the time? No, you can tell the time with a $9 Timex, actually more accurately than a $100,000 Rolex. But they want to get the sense that they are buying from somebody who understands what they're trying to do and why they're trying to do it. So it's less emphasis on the nits and bits of the product, more emphasis on how that product is going to help them. But the more current research is showing that what people really, really need and really want in the buying cycle is somebody to help take them through the process. Products have become more complex. The process of buying the product has actually become more complex. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I want to go to process. I want to click on a couple of things that you just mentioned, John. So I went through Tony Robbins' Mastering Influence. I'm a big Tony Robbins fan, and he has his four keys to selling. I'd like to see if there's any holes in his, because I'm a firm believer in it, or if you validate any of his. And number one is rapport. number one key to influence is rapport. And then backed by rapport, number two is quality questions. Quality questions would be number two. Number three is personal congruency, meaning I believe you win more than me when you buy this product or service. And then number four is state management, me in control of my physiology, my words, and my focus. And if I have those four things on lock, rapport, questions, personal congruency, and state management, that positions me as the person of influence. My ability to be able to persuade or sell or influence or solve a problem or whatever we want to call selling. What would you say to that? Just curious.
One, I will never challenge Tony Robbins. Just not a good place to be. Okay. A lot of respect for what he's done. I will challenge one aspect of what you just said. And I'm going to get very, very granular here, but I believe this is very, very important. There are two things that we really talk about in sales, but we combine them into one. One is the initial introduction of the salesperson or the concept to the potential buyer. Second is, as the process goes along to culminate the sale and or to go into upsell, cross-sell, and future sales. What we tend to do is we tend to take both of those situations and combine them into one. So on the initial sale, the whole notion of walk into the prospect's office, see a picture of his kid playing baseball and go, oh, my kid plays baseball too. So you can build rapport and spend 5 minutes or 10 minutes talking about some things that you think might interest them, to me is nonsense and has been proven to be nonsense. It's proven to be wrong. That's not to say that you walk in and you just go, hey, we're here to talk about your deal. That's not what's going on. But I've been watching and I've been practicing this whole notion of how fast can I connect with that person? And I'm watching people, and I'm doing this myself, connecting with another person on initial interaction in something like under 30 seconds. Because what's going on in the mind of the prospect at that point? In the mind of the prospect, what they're doing is they're going, oh, gee, Mike, okay, do I trust you? Do I look like you? Do you look like me? Are you coming across like me? Do you speak like me? In other words, are you going to eat me? Do I have to shoot you? Do I have to run? Or can we have a conversation? That's going on in the mind of potential buyer. That's going on in the first few minutes. So for you to say, oh, my kid's in high school, that doesn't build rapport. What builds rapport is how you look, how you immediately greet the person, what kinds of things you start to talk about, how you interact with them. That's what builds rapport. A lot of that rapport nowadays, and this is what's one of the things that's changed so much in selling, a lot of that rapport or no rapport is built on how you come across from a social media perspective. I forget what LinkedIn stats are, but I think it's like 80-something percent of all buyers check out the seller on LinkedIn or some other form of social media before they ever meet with them. So folks, the stuff that you're putting out on social media impacts your ability to sell, whether you like it or not. You might say it's my personal page, but somebody's going to get a sense of your personal page before they speak to you from a buyer-seller perspective. So what that buyer is trying to understand in that first 4 minutes or so, and again, it depends upon who you read, that time is shorter or a little bit longer. They're trying to get a sense of, is it safe to talk to this person? Can I trust this person? And what becomes so fascinating is that initial subconscious decision on the part of the buyer is what colors the entire transaction, because all they're doing for the rest of the 42 minutes or so, because we assume most conversations are 45 minutes, what they're doing for the rest of that time is their subconscious is going, did I make the right decision or not? Do I want to stay or do I want to back out? But that decision was made in the first 4 minutes. So if you're going to spend that time talking about your son's baseball game, concert you went to last week, oh yeah, I haven't been down to Florida in years, has it changed? You're wasting your time.
So if we want deep connection is what we're saying with rapport, do you have any tools or tips? I know it's interesting. I mean, we need to be genuinely interested. That's how we create deep rapport. But do you have any additional tool that a listener can say, oh, that's how I can go deep fast in under 30 seconds?
What I'm saying is it's not about going deep fast. The reaction that you're looking
for. Or maybe connect. I connect quicker.
Yes, I definitely understand that. What is going on is going on in the eyes and in the mind of the buyer. It's not about you, the seller. It's about you helping the buyer come to the conclusions that you want them to come to without forcing them. So it's, remember the phrase, nobody likes to be sold, but everybody wants to buy. Don't try to be selling the buyer in the very beginning by, I'm going to push rapport on him now for the next 3.5 minutes. It doesn't work, dude. People want to buy from people. We're so starved to buy from people now. but we're trying to figure out, can I trust this person or not? Because the distrust level in this country has gotten so high, and it's getting higher every day, especially with things like AI coming on stream. We don't know Mike, I don't even know if you're real or if you're an avatar. Let's put it that way. I mean, I know you're real, but that's how crazy it's getting.
This connection piece is really important. I'm glad you are bringing light to this, because what I heard when you said it's not about me, it's about them. It's what am I doing is really not even appropriate. It's more of how are they feeling? How is Correct. This person feeling? And then if you wanted to say that differently, might be like, how can I create an environment for them, this person, to feel a certain way so you can Correct. Actually influence it? But really the radar of the salesperson is, how is this person feeling in this moment or in this interaction? And just being aware of that, because I assume, John, but I probably should ask, I assume there's certain feelings that when they're feeling this person's going to eat me or hurt me or whatever, the salesperson needs to pivot quickly, right? In order to adjust their approach if they sense that there's not a connection. Is this something that you teach where it's like, if you know that there is not a connection with the person that you're attempting to sell in those first 30 seconds or in those first 4 minutes, do we just bow out, or is there an adjustment period? Like, hey, this is how you can have a call a reset.
You can always go for clarification. And what I'm going to say, I want people to really understand what I'm saying, because I'm going to upset a few people when I say this. Understand that virtually nobody, and I'm not going to say nobody because I haven't met everybody in the world, virtually nobody can sell everybody that they meet. All right. So when we get really advanced into some of these sales concepts, there is a notion, because I'll bring it up now, called the red velvet rope policy. If you haven't seen this, I think this was a Michael Port notion that he wrote about in one of his books. And the notion is, we all should set up a VIP line, or he calls it the red velvet rope. And we should say, these are the types of people I want to do business with. The more you think about this, the more qualities you add to this. And what you're trying to do in the beginning is understand, does this person exhibit the qualities of an individual you want to do business with? And if you see red flags right away, then yes, you should back away from the deal immediately. Because the point is that if you have a red velvet rope policy, you're going to have people that are aligned with your beliefs, with what you're trying to do. And those are the people that you want to work with, because they take less effort. You can satisfy them. You can make them happy. You can generate more revenue from them. They're happy to do that for you. So in that beginning, one of the things you're doing as the seller is you're trying to figure out, is this somebody I want to do business with? So there are people that I've just said, look, dude, we're not going to be able to do business. Somebody comes on and you're trying to understand what they're doing. You're trying to understand the challenges, the problems, and they're going like, what's the price? What's the price? What's the price? What's the price? Dude, I can't do business with you. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. What it means is that I have set up my red velvet rope policy to a point that says, I need somebody that can focus on solving the problem, not somebody who just wants to be a price buyer. I'm not a price seller. And so this is where the sellers have to start to understand the value that they bring to the table, not just from a product perspective, but from a selling perspective. What do they as an individual bring to the table? That person doesn't resonate, you go away. Now, that's one extent. That's one extreme. But you always have to be willing to walk away from a deal in sales.
I want to just click on what you said. I've never heard that before. And I really love that there's price buyers and price sellers. And I'm not a price seller. I want to solve a problem. And I really, really like that a lot. So thank you for that notion and that note of wisdom there. I want to take everything we just said. I want to pivot just a little bit and bring what we Sure. just captured with this connection and rapport and how we're helping someone feel, and bring it into sales process. Because I think a lot of the individuals are listening to this, they might hear, well, if I want to make someone feel a certain way, doesn't that happen in marketing? That doesn't necessarily happen in sales. And that's where maybe those crosshairs potentially happen in a sales process, where it's like, however I'm attracting them into my business is creating that feeling. So before they even get to the sales process, if they're looking at my digital business card, aka social media, it's creating a feeling. So there's a level of intention behind the marketing, behind the brand development, that sets the stage for the sales process to exist. That's kind of what I was hearing. And then during the sales process is making sure they're feeling a certain way during that process. I want to start there And then there was also the client maximization on the back end of like lifetime value and renewals and continuing to have ascension offers and add value to them post the first point of contact. And that's a part of the sales process too, but it's more of the maximization of the client's lifetime value. So let's start at the top of the funnel, if you wouldn't mind. Yeah. And just riff on whatever it is that you want to talk about when it comes to taking what we talked about, like selling a watch or buying a Corvette, to how someone who is more in the digital space can impact, attract, convert, and retain on the back end by an effective sales process.
No, this is great. I guess what you're saying is let's spend the next 3 days on this topic because that's about what it's going to take. This is now you're really opening the door to the interesting stuff. And this is one of the things that I work with organizations on. Take the whole notion of that initial interaction with the client, of them saying, are they going to eat me or not? And understand that notion on the part of the prospect goes on every time there is any kind of a shift in the interaction. Now, what do I mean by shift? Every time they see something that is different than what they saw before or what they believed before. The biggest difference is when you transition from a marketing situation to a sales situation. So part of that whole notion of the buyer going, do I like this person? Do I trust this person? Can I speak to this person? Is how much of a shift is there from the expectation that was set on the marketing side to how the salesperson is coming on? What I would say to you is that so many companies think that marketing is marketing and sales is sales, and one has nothing to do with the other. And the way that you interact with your prospect, the image that you give them is not the image of the product. That's not what they're getting from your website. What they're getting from your website is what is the experience going to be like of dealing with this organization or this individual, depending upon if you're a solopreneur or not. But that's what they're getting from social media. So that's why I said before, if somebody goes to check you out and they go on your personal page and there's pictures of you getting drunk at the football game and having mud wrestling in your backyard on July 4th, and they're like, wait a minute, that's not consistent with the type of person that I believe is going to bring value to me. And you go, wait a minute, but that's me, that's person. Yeah, but we're not in the world anymore of keeping our business life separate from our personal life. That's gone. It's over. So we are whoever we are, however we come across to the buyer. So this whole notion of marketing should talk about the value that somebody can expect to get. They should talk about the process, what it's like to work with you. They should talk about the outcomes. They should be able to talk about, is the company really going to be difficult on their terms and conditions? What is their human resources policy relative to clients' engagement of people? Are they DEI? All of these kinds of things should be coming out up front. So the person says, that's the kind of organization I want to do business with. Hate to say it, guys, but virtually nobody has a unique offering. And then let me add one other thing to this, Mike, that people don't really talk about, the substitution effect. To explain exactly what goes on with this. And having been selling for over 40 years for very large accounts and doing this on a consulting basis, so many times I've sat in forecast meetings and the manager goes, well, tell me about this deal, blah, blah, blah. Here's about what's going on with this deal. And the manager goes, who else are they looking at? Because nobody truly has a unique proposition. And they say, well, they're looking at this and that, the next thing. And the manager says, fine, well, here's how we knock off this and knock off this and knock off this. And I know we can knock those off really easy. So let's rate this up at a 95%. What they don't understand, because they're looking at it from a technical buying perspective, what they don't understand is that the individual making the decision or the individual who's coaching you in the organization and influences the decision is buying from a personal needs perspective. Substitution for them could be no deal. Substitution for them could be reallocate the funds to a completely different project. And if you don't understand what that buyer is looking to get from this interaction, if you don't understand the problem that they're trying to solve, the personal problem that they're trying to solve, then you're walking in the dark thinking you only have three competitors because those are the people you know. So the whole marketing side should be talking to helping the buyer understand all of these issues. Now, when you as the salesperson get introduced, you have to understand what it is that they believe they're walking into, reinforce the positive side of that, make sure there are no disconnections as they change from the marketing side to the personal seller side. Once you get through that, now your job is to make sure that all the interactions with the client are consistent, that there are no traps, that there are no hiccups, that there's no changes. Again, make selling easy. make it easy for them to say yes.
One of the things I want to click on here is this is where the reverse engineering of the sales process, all the if-thens are really important. We've had many conversations on the podcast about this, the if-thens. If you reverse engineer, the E-Myth talks about, Michael Gerber talks about, how do I want the end user to feel at the end? How does that person feel with the mint on the pillow, with their coffee that they had at dinner actually brought to them, or at breakfast the day before is brought to their hotel room the next morning and it's set to go off at 7 a.m. when they wake up? Like the lighting situation in the room, like Michael Gerber does a great job in the E-Myth, but it's like, how do we document the entire process of how this person is feeling at the end? And how do we bring that all the way back and through every single change of hands? How is it documented? How does everyone in the organization know this is what we want the outcome to be? So therefore, there needs to be consistency for us to get there from their first point of contact with us until we're fulfilling on that promise. And I really love that. And that goes into, you might want to audit your emails. You might want to audit your text messages. You might want to audit your call to actions on your website. You might want to audit all the videos that they're watching. Are they watching any videos? What do those videos say, right? All of the things, the messaging that goes behind it. One of the things I'll share, John, anytime someone hops on a call with me, you probably know this, but the listener, just something you might think about, is at the end of a Calendly, you could redirect them to a website. So instead of redirecting them to a confirmation page, every one of my links, I would say probably 85% of the links I use, there's a redirect to a video of me priming them for the conversation. So if they're booking a discovery call, as you know, in the sales call, since what we're talking about, it says, hey, thank you so much for giving me your time. All I ask is you show up in an environment where we could actually speak the unspoken, peel back. I'll ask you a bunch of questions and we'll see if it's a good fit. Either way, you're going to leave with a bunch of value and I'm excited to get to know you. So I look forward to our conversation. Something like that. And oh, by the way, I sent you an email with a resource. You might want to check that out before we have our combo. Something along those lines as a primer. So you might want to think about in your business, listener, where can you prime? Where can you add value? Where can you connect? Where can you add a human touch? Even if potentially a human can't be there at that exact moment, but leveraging video and whatnot. So that's my little riff on that. You struck a chord of inspiration, John. Let me kick it back to you. It seems like there were a couple of additional thoughts there.
Yeah, I want to stay with this for a second because you're into something that is extremely important, even though folks might think it's not. This is so important. I'll give you a couple of examples. I had to go. I forget where I had to go. It doesn't even matter. And I flew in. I usually, if I've got a meeting the next morning, I'll fly in the afternoon before. I try not to take the absolute last flight of the day because if it gets delayed, which we do out of Newark a lot, then you're screwed for your morning meeting. But I flew in. We took like a 4 or 5 hour delay. I think I got to the hotel at 3 o'clock, 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm exhausted. Even though I can sleep on planes, I'm exhausted. Now, I historically, 99% of my stays at hotels are Marriott's. Is Marriott the best hotel in the world? No. To me, Four Seasons is the best hotel in the world. But Marriott provides a consistent, clean experience. That's my perspective as the buyer. So walked in, nice person at the front desk checked me out. Yeah, they were bleary-eyed too. It was 2:30 in the morning. Got me in my room. So I got you a nice room, sent me upstairs to my room. It took me a few minutes to get up there. I walk in the room, scan the room, and there's a Starbucks coffee cup sitting on the side table. 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. What I could have done was taken the cup and throw it in the garbage and go to bed. But what the Starbucks coffee cup, this is a used coffee cup, said to me was, somebody doesn't care enough to give me an excellent experience. And if the Starbucks coffee cup is sitting there that somebody left, what else is wrong with this room? So 2:30 in the morning, I call the front desk and I said, dude, this is not Marriott standard. I need a new room and I need it now. And it put a negative image in my mind of Marriott. And understand, they've spent 30 years building a positive image in my mind. And in under a second, took a notch down. That's the kind of detail I'm talking about. Let me give you one other that we did as an experiment. Buyers would ask our sales team that I was working with, can you do this? Can you do that? And you know, there's things you can't do. And you go, no, can't do that. And I said, but you're not converting these calls, converting these interactions. I said, why don't you start by, if the buyer asks you a question, taking a moment, taking a breath, looking at the buyer and going, yes, and then go into your qualifying. And what they didn't realize was that because they said no, the buyer's mind shut down without ever asking for clarification. But the yes gave them the opportunity to clarify and help the buyer understand the significance of what they were asking. So it's these tiny little things that make a big difference. And I'll give you one more. I was asked to take over, and I don't want to name them, but I was asked to take over the number one or the number two life insurance company as an account exec a number of years ago. We were doing some business with them, but we needed to explode the relationship. And that's what I did. So they brought me in and I sat down with my contact and I said, help me understand how you want to buy. They said, here's what we need to do in order to be a good customer. Here's what you need to do in order to be a good vendor. I said, fine, we'll do it. Brought that account to the number two account in the company, and they were not even in the basement when I took them over, because the simple thing that they said to me was, we're an insurance company. We don't want surprises. That's all they said. No beta, no first products, no reference calls, none of that stuff. They wanted to be left alone to do their business. When they wanted me, they wanted me to be responsive. I said, fine. Nice seven-figure deal. So it's these little things, Mike, that we talk about. But it's when you do them that you then develop this relationship with the buyer that says the buyer now can say, I can trust this person. They understand me. And that's how you get to upsells, cross-sells, next sells. I used to walk in, I'm not going to tell the whole thing, but I used to walk in when I was asked to take over major accounts or to work with major accounts. One of the things I would ask them, I would say, look, if you want me to be your contact, if you want me to work with you, I have to understand that I can keep you for 8 to 10 years. Are you willing to work with me to develop that relationship? Do you know I never got a no?
That's longer than some dogs live, man. That's commitment, you know? I like that.
I never thought of it from the dog's perspective. I like that.
So one of the things that was resonating with me as you were speaking there, John, was solopreneurs, if you're listening to this, you're wearing all those hats, but you might not label it that way. So when John was saying that he's like the fulfillment of the offer is consistent with the sales, which is consistent with the marketing, the solopreneur, you're doing all of them, whether you know it or not. I would just encourage you to label the differences as like different departments. So as you scale, as you add on staff or add on more talent, you're building out processes for your marketing, which is separate from the sales, which is separate from the fulfillment. However, you want to have the transition periods to make sure there's no friction as those three departments are changing hands. If you're doing them all right now, that's no problem. You do your marketing, you book your sales call, and then it's like, I'm fulfilling, I'm coaching you as an example. Let's say if you're a coach, great, you're doing all three of them. Eventually, you might not be doing all three. So having some sort of separation and then those transition points, make sure that we're reducing friction there. I really, really appreciate the wisdom here, John. Is there anything, John, that we did not hit on today that you're like, I'd really like for us to hit on that or capture that before we transition to our final three questions we like to ask every guest?
There's really a couple of things. I started my focus when I decided to do this to salespeople because that's my tribe. When I wrote the book in 2022, that talks basically about mindset. And I've shifted my focus more recently because what I'm seeing for the first time ever is the number of layoffs in the white collar space. I've never seen this, and we've never had it in this country before. All of the layoffs historically have been blue collar. And now blue collar is actually more secure in what they're doing. White collar is the one that's getting laid off more. So what's happening is people are coming out of corporate America with phenomenal skill sets. People working 10, 20, 30 years. A very good friend of mine just got blown out of Disney after 25 years on the vice president's track because Disney just decided to throw hand grenades into people's lives. Google, Yahoo, all of these people are doing this. They're coming out and what they're saying is, I'm tired of the corporate world, and they translate corporate world into lack of security and negative mindset. That's how they translate it. So I'm going to go off on my own because I have this great subject matter expertise and I can bring a lot of value to people. And what they do then is they start to talk to people about the technical aspects of what they do or the tactical aspects of what they do. The person doesn't make a buying decision and they sit there and they wonder what happened. They don't get back to me. They're not returning my call. I don't understand. I can help them. I can bring so much value to them. And this is one of the biggest mind shifts that has to happen right now. Understand that buying is not a process that occurs based on technical excellence or technical capability. Buying is based on the individual emotionally feeling secure enough to put money in your hands to help them solve a problem. And if you start the conversation from a technical or tactical perspective, where if you give the buyer too much information to allow them to talk themselves out of it, because remember that brain, the subconscious is going, do I trust them? Do I not trust them? I need to spend 42 minutes figuring out if I should not trust them and get out of this. They're doing that on you. So understand that you have to forget to a large extent. I know this is hard. All of the technical and tactical aspects of what it is that you bring to the table and start to understand that this now is a personal interaction between you and the buyer. This is only in the beginning. If you can make that shift, I can help you make that shift. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. If you can make that shift, you're going to find out you're going to have a lot more conversations. You're going to have a lot more clients.
It's so relevant because there are experts who are really good at doing the fulfillment, but they're really bad at the marketing and the selling. And what you're providing to them is an opportunity for them to work in their genius and live in their genius and solving the problems that they're meant to solve with a couple of small, simple tweaks on the front end so they could attract and convert more people that they can actually fulfill the offer for. And a lot of people need that. And I love that. So I'm excited to have you share a little bit about the Attitude Selling Mindset Mastermind and everything you're doing. Before we get into that, I like to ask every guest three questions. These could be short hitting, whatever comes to mind. The first question we like to ask every guest is, what do you think the world needs most today?
To chill. Just stop, relax, calm down, start connecting with people. We have done a phenomenal job. Now, yes, this is another long rant I get into, but I won't. We now know more about each other than we ever have in the history of mankind. And this is a lot of it through the use of technology and us just getting smarter how to use it. And the reason it's important, why I say what I said, is because it is being used against us to make sure that we polarize into, I'll use it from a political perspective, but it's not just political, but whether you're a Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're black or whether you're white or whether you're a Northerner or whether you're a Southern, I don't care. But we have been able to identify people so granularly that we can pull them apart and polarize them. You go, why is that important? Why is that being done? It's because that people who are fanatic about their beliefs spend more money in support of anything that supports that belief, whether it's true or not. So a lot of the nonsense that's going on, as far as I'm concerned, in this country is because we keep sucking up that information and believing that it's true. We need to stop, one, believing that it's all true, and two, start figuring out what's important to us. Go hug your kid. Take your dog for a walk. Pick up the phone and call your mother or call somebody that you haven't spoken to for a while. Stop getting so frenetic. Breathe.
It's a great response. Second question we like to ask every guest is, what are 1 to 3 books that you think people should read?
I think that immediately they should read mine, of course, but you know, if I didn't say that, who would I be?
There you go.
I still think Chris Voss's book, I can never remember the name
of
it.
Never Split the Difference, is that one?
Yeah, Never Split. It's a fantastic book. There's a few things. One, and I will tell you that I really do suggest you read this. It's not even a book. It's an article that was written in the 60s. It was written by a fellow by the name of Theodore Levitt. It's 20 pages, and it's called Marketing Myopia. Read it 3 times. It'll only take you a few minutes bathroom reading if you want. It is one of the most insightful pieces of work I have ever read and explains so much when you start to think about how am I going to be able to shift my business as times go on. I've used it to turn businesses around.
And who wrote the article?
Theodore Levitt.
Cool. I haven't heard of that one. That's a new one. It looks like there's a synopsis of it too. So you can get a summary.
Pages. Yeah. It's 20 pages. Come on, guys.
That's great. That's great. And what is the name of your book? I know you held it up, but just in case someone's listening.
It's Winning the Inner Game of Sales.
And I'm assuming it's on Amazon.
It's on Amazon. Great. Definitely.
Great. Yes. Last question we like to ask every guest is, what does it mean to you to be better than rich?
As I said before, a couple of seconds ago, if you can't be comfortable with yourself, if you can't look at yourself and say, am I achieving my personal goals and objectives based on my efforts, based on my energy, based on my direction, not based on putting somebody else down. If I can't be happy with myself, if I can't give to the people that I want to give to, and I'm not talking money, I'm talking emotionally. Would I like a brand new Ferrari in the garage? Sure, most people would. That's conceptual, whether you're a Ferrari lover or not. But is that really what you're trying to accomplish? Is that really how at your funeral, you want somebody to say, oh, yeah, I remember John. He had a Ferrari in his garage. No, I want them to say, you know, every time I needed help and I called him, he was there for me. That to me is rich. Where people say, hey, I'm glad that you're here. I'm glad that you showed up. That's rich. Rather have that.
Well, John, I'm sure some individuals are going to want to stay in touch with you. I'm sure that there are a handful of individuals that are like, man, I really need to audit some of my sales processes and I could use some support with that. Can you tell us a little bit more about the Attitude Selling Mindset Mastermind that you're doing, the 5-week cohort?
Yeah, great. What I'm suggesting to you folks is that you can be 100% great at sales techniques and you can understand product, but I'll give you an example that probably shows the best. If you were out with your parents and you were 3 years old to 4 years old, and you walked into, and we'll just use this as an example, into a car dealership, and the salesperson came over, and I mean, you have no idea, you're 3 or 4 years old, as you're mad. The salesperson came over, salesperson spoke to your mother and your father left, your mother and father look at each other and goes, you can't trust that person, he's a salesperson. That message that they just said, even though you're sitting there going like, wow, that's a pretty color car, right? You're 3 or 4 years old, that message went into your subconscious. Understand that those messages are happening at something like 50 to 60,000 messages a day, and they create a mindset in you. And understand that if you then, you're in your 20s or in your 30s, somebody says, hey, do you want a job? Sure, I want a job. Hey, go sell. That your ability to then get up in the morning and go sell when your subconscious is going, hey, you can't sell. That's inconsistent with your perspective of yourself because selling is bad. That's what your parents told you. You don't even know that's going on. So what I'm suggesting is that if you really want to be successful, success in sales is one of the greatest things you can do. It's one of the most rewarding things you can do in your life. Then you need to change your mindset. And we go through a 5-week process. We're probably going to kick it down to 4 weeks just to help people get through this faster. And we take a look at the mindset about sales that you have, mindset relative to sales that you have about the buyer, how your product or your offering fits into that, and some commentary and some insight into how markets work in general. And then we turn around and ask you to recast your value proposition. So we make changes when we're forced to, or we make changes when we're in a comfortable environment and we're supported in those changes. Masterminds allow you and cohorts allow you to make those changes with a select group of people that support you. So that's what we're creating.
Where might someone go if they wanted to get more information about that or register for the next one?
AttitudeSelling.com. Peruse the website, get in touch with me, book Calendly with me, send me an email, send me a carrier pigeons. Yes, I accept carrier pigeons. And let's chat. The mastermind is explained in pretty much detail there. And let's get on it.
Yeah, it looks great. And you could also get his book, John's book, right on his website as well. AttitudeSelling.com. We'll make sure we put that in the show notes. And John, excellent, excellent content today. Really appreciate you and your wisdom and your time and your professionalism and expertise. And listener, just a couple of few announcements. I know I've been saying this the last few episodes, but Better Than Rich is kind of going through a rebrand into Time Rich. So if you ever see any emails from Time Rich, that is us, because we are really double downing this year in 2024 on helping these high earning business owners buy back time and offloading the bottom 20%. So that way they could reinvest that time into what matters most to them. And right now I'm doing free 90-day delegation planning sessions for those who want to take me up on it. I'm not going to be doing this forever, but I am doing them right now because it's bringing me a lot of energy. If you wanted to book one and get a 25-page time audit workbook, you could go to betterthanrich.com/90-day plan and book a call. I'd love to have a conversation with you to see how we could get your bottom 20% offloaded. Our team of AI-powered virtual assistants, we have recently hired about 10 new staff members in the next 60 in the previous 60 days because we're just fulfilling a high demand on our virtual assistant services right now. So if we can support you, please let us. And I look forward to helping you be time rich. So again, John, thank you. Listener, as always, thank you so much for being a valuable member of our community and a follower of the show. And I'll look forward to seeing you next time. And as always, leave today better than you found it. We'll see you next week. Cheers. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the show, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from us, you can follow us on Instagram @better_than_rich. And join our Facebook group @The Better Than Rich Show. Thanks again for listening. We look forward to seeing you next time. And remember, leave today better than you found it.